My name is Bob Reese. I'm along with Dr. Brad Walker on the far right, co-founder and current vice president of the Leah Hunter Children's Foundation. I got involved in this project when I read an article in Dialogue called Moving Zion Southward. I think that was what it was called, wasn't it? In which Brad had written about his experience in Central America, working with seeing a malnourished child who eventually perished because of want of a simple amount of nutrition, and his heart was moved by that, and I was moved by what his heart was moved by, and got in touch with him and said, "I'd like to be a part of what you're doing." We started out very modestly, and currently, I think we start out in one or two stakes. Is that right, Brad? In five stakes. And we are currently in 180 stakes in 17 countries, from Zimbabwe to Mongolia, and a lot of places in between. And this is a project which it seems to me nobody can argue with, because it is designed to take care of the least of the Lord's children, especially children who have no means to provide for their own health and nourishment. So what we'd like to do today is do several things. I'll begin by talking a little bit about the work of the foundation, just showing a couple of slides. We will then, I think, see a video of our work in Guatemala, and then we'll hear from Gloria, who is from Guatemala and with whom I've had the privilege of working when I have gone to Guatemala on behalf of the foundation. After which we will have Brad give a PowerPoint presentation on giving you background of our work on the foundation. I'll show you another video and then say some concluding words, and then hopefully be able to answer any questions that you have. So let me begin by showing you a PowerPoint slide. This is the home of a Latter-day Saint sister in Guatemala. She's a single mother with four children. I counted the other day how many times I go to the refrigerator in my home and to the pantry. Every time I take a hot shower or use an indoor toilet, it's hard for me not to be aware of the hundreds of thousands of our Latter-day Saint brothers and sisters who have no refrigerator to go to. They have no stove in which to cook. In fact, when I was in Guatemala with Gloria, you can translate for her if you want, Alan, but maybe it's not necessary. But when I was in Guatemala with Gloria a couple of years ago, one afternoon, we spent making a stove, an outdoor stove, for a family who had no stove on which to cook their food. The greatest unused gift of the Spirit is the imagination. And it seems to me that Christ is constantly calling us to use our imagination to think about the lives of other people. Let me pull this up so it's the full thing. But sometimes I imagine what it must be like to live in this house and to have four children and to be a single mother that is multiplied across the developing world many, many times. This is a picture of two little boys, Mirato, the taller one, and Siraka, the other one. They were born on the same day. The one on, that is the shorter one, is malnourished. And the older one was receiving, I don't know why this is, keep blinking like it's doing. I did say something. Get that. This is what we face in the work that we do for the foundation. There are at present, and by our estimate, 125,000 malnourished Latter-day Saint children in the world. Our foundation has been working for almost a decade, and we have had significant progress in being able to get Latter-day Saints to contribute to our work, and we now are in the position to reach maybe a tenth of the 125,000, or probably less than that, actually, more like 8% of the 125,000 malnourished children. But at least we are reaching those and doing what we can to provide the nutritional supplements for them. But this gives you a graphic illustration of the difference between a child who is nourished and one who is malnourished. You can see from these things that what happens is that malnourishment leads to impairment of brain development and a lower IQ, weakened immune system, greater risk of disease like diabetes and cancer, and obviously a shorter stature. The first 1,000 days of a child's life are absolutely critical. It's a window that if you miss it forever. It's not something that you can make up. You can't recapture those 1,000 days. So the first 1,000 days of a child's life are the really critical ones. And if we miss them, then the impact on that child's life is permanent. A number of studies have been done showing you the difference, but here you can see that a child who is malnourished has 4.64 fewer grades in school, goes to that. He leaves school 3.25 years earlier. His lower household per capita expenditure is 50% lower. His probability of living in poverty is 42% points higher. The younger age at first birth of women who are stunted is 4.26 years, more pregnancy, almost 2.5 more, and more children. So you can see the impact, and it's intergenerational, and one sees over a long period of time the impact of chronic malnutrition. This particular graph is about Madagascar, where 50% of the children are malnourished, but they're not the only ones. You can see from this map that there are others, and in a number of places where I've been involved in screening, half of the children, and sometimes more than half of the children we screen, are malnourished. But even if it's 20 or 30 or 40%, it's much higher than it should be. While there's been some progress made in diminishing malnutrition in the world, it still is a very serious problem, as you can see from this graph. And again, this just has been holding steady. The cost of inaction. UNICEF estimates that malnutrition in Madagascar costs the country about $740 million every year. That is about 7% of the GDP. And if you were to spend money, if you were trying to address that, look how that what percentage of that it would take to address this problem. So here are these two boys who have two vastly different futures. There are many Latter-day Saint children who fit into the category of the boy, the boy of a shorter stature. So it is a problem, it's a significant problem, but we at the Leona Children's Foundation are very hopeful of being able to address it. So I'm going to show you now a video of some of the work that we're doing. And if I can find it right away. See, I think this is the right one. No. Well, I had all of them up here, but I don't see that one. So anyway,
Hi, I'm Sarah Walker. I'm with the Leah Hona Children's Foundation. The Leah Hona Children's Foundation can generally estimate which countries have a problem with malnutrition based off of available international health data, and we welcome the opportunity to collaborate with local and area authorities in identifying which states in those countries are in the greatest need. After liaising with area authorities, states are selected where the Leah Hona Children's Foundation can begin their program. At that point, we contact state presidents to make sure that they are interested in the program. Once they are, we work with them to establish a time to be able to conduct a screening. The screening is relatively simple and consists of us taking height and weight of children and pregnant women to identify which of those are malnourished and can be on the program. Once the children are identified, a local member is selected by the state president to become a coordinator. The coordinators are paid a small stipend, are very dedicated, and volunteer a lot of their time to distribute supplements monthly to children that are malnourished, and to rescreen them so that we can check their progress. Many of the families that we work with have been stuck in a cycle of malnutrition for generations, and it's our hope that we can help break that. If there are any districts or states in your area that you feel are in need, we would welcome the opportunity to discuss with you further how we might be able to address those needs.
And the one that I was looking for, I don't see here. But while I will look for it, while we ask Gloria to talk about her work in Guatemala. Gloria has been, how long has Gloria been working for us, Brad?
Oops. Well, I've most of that coming.
Excuse me. How long has Gloria been coordinator for us?
8 years.
8 years, okay. So, why don't you take the mic, so Gloria, and you and Gloria, is that alive? Yeah. You need to hold it to your mouth because it's really hard to hear otherwise. So, have Gloria talk about her work, and Alan, who is executive director of the foundation, and who was a missionary in Guatemala.
She wants
her
PowerPoint. Pardon?
Oh.
What's in there? This is her PowerPoint.
Which one? This one?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, okay. I'm going to do a PowerPoint in here for Gloria. Sorry about the technology, but I am of that age of being technologically challenged, as my kids and grandkids would attest to. Which one is it? Gloria. Okay, there we go.
Buenas tardes a todos.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Es un gozo para mí poder estar acá con usted.
It's a joy for me to be here with you.
Vengo de parte de el área de Centroamérica.
I come here representing Central America.
Y para mí ha sido una vida muy feliz poderle servir a las personas que más me necesitan.
It's made my life very happy to be able to work on behalf of these kids.
Estamos viviendo en estos países en un área donde vivimos una pobreza y una pobreza extrema.
In the countries that we're living in Central America, there is a great deal of poverty, and it's a deep poverty.
Y que cada día crece más.
And each day the poverty seems to be getting worse.
La Fundación Liahona está ayudando a los niños en especial en esas áreas.
The Liahona Foundation is helping the kids in this area.
La Fundación ha sido una bendición para la vida de estas familias y niños.
The foundation has been a blessing in the families of these children.
So, Alan, I need to know when slide, what slides she wants. Is she controlling the slides? You want,
kidding.
You want her to come up here?
Can you pronounce the authority?
She'll let me know.
Alan?
Okay.
It's
all right. She'll let you know.
Okay, because you could stand up here and you could do it if you wanted.
Pues yo pienso de que cada día que tengo de vida,
I think that every day of life I have,
es un honor poderle servir a estas personitas que lo necesitan.
It's an honor to help these little children.
Saben que hay niños que están sufriendo una pobreza.
There are many children who are suffering poverty.
Que los padres hacen lo posible por darles de comer.
The parents are doing all they can to give them something to eat.
Pero no comen saludable.
But they don't eat in a healthy way.
Porque ellos no tienen un trabajo para poderles comprar lo que realmente necesitan los niños.
Because the parents just can't find enough work to help their kids eat healthy.
Y también tenemos a los niños que tienen pobreza extrema.
And there are some kids who have an extreme level of poverty.
Los niños que tienen pobreza extrema, ellos duermen con hambre.
Those kids that are in extreme poverty go to sleep hungry.
No tienen una mesa.
They don't have a table.
Una silla, una cama.
Or a chair or a bed.
Ellos comen en el piso de tierra.
They eat on the dirt floor.
Duermen con una manta en el piso de tierra.
They sleep on a mat on the dirt floor.
Donde el suelo es duro.
Where the dirt is hard.
Pero ellos no saben que existe algo mejor, algo bueno para ellos.
But they don't know that there's anything better for them.
Con la Fundación Liahona hemos ayudado a estos niños a salir de la desnutrición que es la que los está matando.
And with the Liahona Foundation, we've helped many of those children get out of that malnutrition.
Estos niñitos que tienen pobreza extrema están enfermos. Tienen ronchas en la piel, tienen el pelito así bien mal y se enferman mucho de infecciones.
So the kids in extreme poverty are often very ill. They'll have problems with their skin, they'll have problems with their hair, they'll have problems with typical kinds of illnesses that don't seem to go away.
Y hay miles y miles de niños a los que estamos ayudando.
And there are thousands upon thousands of kids that we're helping.
Y queremos ayudar más porque estos niños son el futuro del mañana.
We want to help more because they're our future.
Y es un honor poder ayudarlos y poder decir de que estamos cambiando las caras tristes por caras felices.
So the foundation goes forward trying to change these characteristics in these kids and bring a smile.
Siempre he pensado que hasta con la salud me dé y los años que tenga de vida, yo lo dedicaré a ayudar a estos niños.
As long as I have health and energy, I'm going to dedicate myself to helping these kids.
Porque ellos no son culpables de vivir la vida que están llevando.
Because it's not their fault that they're living the life they live.
Nosotros somos madres, muchas de las que estamos acá.
Many of us here are mothers.
Y deseamos darle lo mejor a nuestros hijos.
And we want to give our kids the best we can.
¿Cuántas madres no desean también darle lo mejor a sus hijos?
How many other mothers want the same thing?
Pero no pueden. Están como con las manos amarradas porque no hay un trabajo para ellas.
But they're not able to provide that. It's almost their hands are tied.
La Fundación Liahona está ayudando a que estos niños sean saludables.
So the foundation, the Liahona Foundation, makes it possible for these kids to be healthy.
Tienen tantas necesidades que quisiéramos ayudar, pero estamos ayudando con la desnutrición y con el analfabetismo también.
There are many, many needs for these children, but we're helping with nutrition and with learning letters, alphabet as well.
Yo traigo acá algunas muestras de algunos niños de lo que estamos haciendo.
No escuché.
Traigo acá para enseñarles lo que estamos haciendo allá.
So she has a presentation to help you understand a little better what we do.
Quiero darles a conocer un poquito de lo que estamos viviendo.
I want you to get to know a little bit better what it is that she's doing every day.
Estamos en varias áreas de Centroamérica.
We're in various areas of Central America.
También Estamos ayudando a los niños desde de que la madre está en gestación.
So we're trying to help these kids from basically from when the mother becomes pregnant.
Porque la desnutrición se combate paso a paso.
Because malnutrition is defeated nos, step by step.
Nos lleva años ayudar a estos niños.
It takes years to help these kids.
Los estamos ayudando desde que vienen en el vientre de la madre.
So we begin to help them as soon as the mother is pregnant.
Luego ayudamos a la madre cuando está amamantando al niño.
And we also help the mother while she's breastfeeding the child.
Los tenemos hasta los 6 meses.
And so we're helping them for at least 6 months as a lactating mother.
A los 6 meses el niño pasa a ser parte ya de la fundación.
And after about 6 months the child becomes part of the program as well.
También tenemos un control. A cada 6 meses los evaluamos.
So every 6 months we reevaluate the children to see if they're making progress.
Tenemos un grupo de niños que hemos encontrado.
We have a group of kids that we found.
Como ven a ellos que representan a miles de niños en toda el área.
And these represent thousands of children around the area.
Como ven a la niña que está parada. Ella merece vivir.
So the little girl that's standing up, she deserves to live.
La que está allá. Pero merece vivir saludable, pues.
And she needs to be healthy.
Pero ella no puede. No puede porque no tiene la salud.
But she cannot because she doesn't have the health.
Hemos encontrado también a esta mamá con su bebé.
We found this mother with her child.
Y nos ha dado tanto dolor cuando vimos y tuvimos a este niño en nuestras manos.
And it gave us great pain when we saw this child in our arms.
Cuando uno le ve los ojitos, la mirada que es muy apagada y como diciendo, ayúdenme porque yo quiero vivir.
She, when they look in her eyes and you see that stare she has, she's saying, please help me, I want to live.
Como ellos tenemos a miles de niños.
And like these kids, there are many other thousands of children.
Y también tenemos a los niños y los tomamos desde que la madre está en gestación y los dejamos hasta los 5 años.
So we help them from pregnancy through about 5 years.
Es un corto tiempo, pero quisiéramos ayudar más. Pero hay muchos más también que están entrando, que necesitan ayuda.
It's a short time and we'd like to help for even longer, but there are so many kids in this situation that we want to help those young children in that window of opportunity.
Tenemos a madres también que son muy felices recibiendo el producto que les damos para poder ayudar a sus hijos.
And we find that the mothers are really happy to have somebody provide this to help them help their children.
También les damos capacitación a las madres.
We also train the mothers.
Ellas reciben capacitación de cómo alimentar a los niños, higiene, limpieza, y también ayudamos para que las madres vacunen a sus niños.
So we help them learn about nutrition, about cleanliness and hygiene, about how to take care of their children, and also about vaccinations.
Mensualmente entregamos el producto a todos los niños.
So every month we deliver the nutritional product to the children.
Este es el producto que le estamos dando a los niños.
So this is the product that we use in Central America.
Y esto es lo más bonito que podemos encontrar.
This is the most beautiful thing that we can find.
Porque a los 5 años los niños se van.
After 5 years they leave the program.
Pero se van ya saludables.
But they leave healthy.
Se van de caritas tristes, se van con caritas felices.
They go from having sad faces to having happy faces.
Y esta es nuestra invitación.
And this is our invitation.
Que ustedes nos puedan seguir.
That you can follow us or help us.
Si desean información.
Oh, so we can give you more information.
Ahí tenemos la información. Si ustedes quieren involucrarse con nosotros, ayúdennos a sacar esta tarea, ayúdennos a poder tener más niños felices.
And so you can go to our website and find this information. It's LeahonaChildren.org. It actually doesn't have the S on the end.
Por ellos estoy yo acá.
And for them, she's here.
Como diciendo que ellos necesitan una mano de auxilio.
They need a helping hand.
Que los saquemos de ese abismo de nutrición que tienen.
That we pull them out of the abyss of malnutrition.
Es muy triste ver a un niño pobre.
It's very sad to see a poor child.
Y es más triste ver a un niño en extrema pobreza.
And it's even sadder to see one in extreme poverty.
Donde ellos no tienen a dónde acudir, no hay nadie.
Where they don't have anybody to help them.
Desde que Fundación Liahona llegó hace 8 años.
Since the foundation arrived 8 years ago.
Muchos niños ya no murieron.
Many children have not died.
Porque la fundación les ayudó.
Because the foundation helped them.
A llegar a esta edad de 5 años.
To get to the 5-year mark.
No puedo asegurarles que ellos salieron, todos salieron bien. Porque la pobreza es algo que nos afecta también.
I can't assure you that all of them turned out healthy because poverty is a hard thing to beat.
Pero sí les hemos ayudado para que ellos puedan ser más felices.
But we have helped them be happier.
Ellos necesitan de todo, calzado, ropa, necesitan muchas cosas, pero nos hemos enfatizado en la desnutrición.
They need a lot of things. They need shoes, they need clothing. But we focus on giving them the nutrition they need.
Cuando hay hogares que vemos que no hay una cama y que está hecha de madera y solamente tenemos las paredes que tienen una abertura así.
When we get to a house made out of wood that has holes in the wall that are about that large and doesn't have a bed.
Hemos llegado y les hemos ayudado a mejorar su casita.
We have often helped could make that house a better home.
Pero tienen hambre.
But they're hungry.
Y por eso estoy aquí. Y ha sido un honor poder estar frente a ustedes y poder hablar en nombre de ellos.
And that's why I'm here.
Yo lo estoy viviendo.
That's why I'm here to speak for them. And she's
yo tengo, he tomado esos niños en mis manos.
She's taken the children in her arms.
Y ellos están con la mirada, ellos están diciendo auxilio, ayúdenme. Quiero vivir.
And in their eyes, she sees that they're asking for help, that they want to live.
Este es un testimonio muy grande que yo tengo de esto.
That's a testimony I have that's very strong.
Y muchas gracias a ustedes por escucharme.
And thank you very much for listening to me.
Ha sido un gozo poder estar frente a ustedes. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
The Liahona Children's Foundation succeeds primarily because of the good hearts and good, able body and dedication of people like Gloria. So we're very grateful for that. Wherever we work, we couldn't do what we do without that kind of work. So Brad, it's now yours.
So I'm Brad Walker. I'm one of the founders.
Listen, talk into the microphone.
Want me to do the mic?
Yeah. You have to hold it close because it won't.
I'm Brad Walker. I'm a physician, public health. I work in Los Angeles County. All in about to move to Utah.
Can you hear?
I'm going around. You guys hear me okay? I went to a wedding this morning and the grandkids and I baptized on my mission. That was kind of cool. I've never been much of a public speaker. Let me talk about Bob first. What do you guys know about Bob Rees, the famous LDS author, playwright?
Sick to the kids.
Editor of Dialogue, humanitarian.
He has a fairly new book.
And he has a new book. What's your book called, Bob? You don't want to talk about it here.
Why I
Stay.
Why I Stay, which is about the discipleship of contemporary Mormons, and the second volume of that should be out next year.
So Bob, his wife died. Oh,
4 years ago.
4 years. So Bob was kind of crazy. Instead of retiring, he was already about 77, he decided to go travel the globe. So Gloria can tell you that Bob, at 78 probably, maybe it was 77, he went to Guatemala and slept on church fences, running around between stakes while he was screening them. So you can read some of his articles online under, what's the name of that?
Meridian.
Meridian magazine. Gloria here has been a fabulous lead coordinator. So she manages the project in 60 states. She's worked with the area. She only has an elementary school education. She kind of just stood out among the coordinators, so we asked her to do it. Her husband and her raised their kids in a small rural area of Guatemala called Momostenango. Her husband was the district or branch president for 20 years. Now he's the state patriarch. And I think she was the state relief society president for about 10. So she's been all over the place. She's asked for some of her stories about going to the middle of nowhere and finding malnourished kids in LDS wards. She's really got some stories. But okay. So I'll give you a little history of our work. I started working on this and
yeah, just pull it out of that.
So I started working on this in 1999. Initially, I went back to my mission when they dedicated the temple to San Guayaquil, Ecuador. And I ran to a physician stake president, ex-stake president. He was a stake president when I was a missionary, so this was about 20 years later. I mean, he had a lot of starving kids. I said, what are you talking about? Where's the welfare program? He said, no, I'm not kidding. We got a lot of starving kids. I'll prove it to you. And so we got some data, and then starting about 99 through about 2004, I worked actively.
Brad, I put a picture up of the...
That's the kid right there. That he had seen die in a... He was a pediatric ICU doctor in the children's hospital. So I worked for about, it was me, Bob had appeared yet on the scene because the articles hadn't been published, but we published some articles in Dialogue. I worked with some church leaders, even top-level kind of folks, and couldn't get much progress there, so I just kind of got back to news. Well, if anything's going to happen, you're going to have to make it happen. You know, it's not going to be, the church can't get involved right now. You know, it's kind of like the stars align, and as I say, to get that unanimous consent to move forward with something, so the stars didn't align at that time. So then we started the first projects from about 2004 to 2008. It was where I was a missionary a lot, in Guayaquil, Ecuador. And that project fell apart. We got kind of do some negative attention from some area folks, and they squashed it. So we said, all right, what are we going to do now? We kind of run out of options here, but then Bob actually was the person who said, let's run an adopt-a-stake program. We'll talk to the stake presidents. Nobody can intimidate the stake presidents. So. we just called some stake presidents on the phone. So that was me. I called about 8 of them, I think, on the phone and said, hey, would you guys like to participate in my nutrition program? Let's start one. And they told me yes, and one of them was Gloria, stake president. So that's how she got involved in the program. It's one of the first... one of the first stakes. So we started kind of small with the stake leadership, with the stakes. From about 2009 to 2011, our budget was about $30,000. So we had 5 stakes. And then we did something that we hadn't tried before. We're like, no one cares about this project. It's hopeless. That's what Polly, my sister is a pediatrician down at BYU, in the student health center, we decided, doesn't look possible to do anything here. But we gave a talk at the Sunstone Symposium in San Francisco, was it, Bob?
I think it was L.A., but I can't remember.
We gave one in L.A., and then we gave one in San Francisco. We ran to someone from the Bi Common Consent blog who attended. They said, we're going to run an article on you guys on our blog. And they stuck that blog up there, and they said, we knew our budget bounced from about $30,000 to $150,000. We said, hey, maybe it's not hopeless. We have to use social media. So, for us old people, I didn't even have a Facebook account. So, from there, it's kind of kept expanding. I mean, we were in the 5 stakes, and we got up to 20, and we got to 30, and now we're in about 200. I was a little behind there. We're in 200 stakes, roughly. And we have about 12,000 kids from our initial start, which was about 500. So, anytime we go to a stake, there'll be hundreds and hundreds of kids waiting to be screened, usually. I'm not a very good public speaker. I'm sorry, guys. So that's the history of the program.
You're not get up here do this part.
Do you guys remember the days of the 2.5 minute talks? Most of you? Can someone only pay attention for 2.5 minutes? That was the joke in medical school. You only got about 2.5 minutes. See, my time's already up, so, but I'll keep going anyway. This is just an article about global malnutrition. There's about 130 million malnourished kids. They split the malnutrition into two types, the kids that are malnourished but not about to die and the kids who are about to die. So about a quarter of the kids are about to die and about three quarters of them are just malnourished. So why do we care about malnourished kids? Who's going to give me an answer here? How many? What percent of them die? Anybody have an idea? Maybe 10%? About 10% die. What happens to the IQ of the other 90%? It drops about a standard deviation, maybe, somewhere in that range. So here you can just read the long-term effects of malnutrition on children. So the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and an outfit called the Copenhagen Consensus 2012 ranked most important humanitarian interventions around the globe. What was number one? There was kind of a tie for number one between two interventions. What were they?
Malnutrition. Malaria.
Malnutrition was one. The other one was vaccination. Number three?
Water.
Elementary education. Actually, they kind of gave up on having clean water. It's kind of hopeless. You just deworm the kids. You can't get them clean water. It would cost. I mean, just for Brazil to, I think just for Rio, they were talking about the Olympics, just for Rio to have sanitary water in the city would cost them like $50 billion or something. It's a Herculean task.
Utah Lake.
Yeah. So this shows the cognitive effect of malnutrition, how the brain ends up permanently small. Oh, we do have a little connection up there. The poverty cycle, the parents are stunted as children, so they have a low IQ. So when they work, they don't make much money. And then when they grow up, and then they have kids, they can't make enough money to feed their kids, so their kids end up in the same circumstance. How much money do you need to make per day to feed a family and have decent nutrition? Give me a guess here. Your dad, you got three kids and wife. How much do you need to make per day to likely avoid malnutrition? About $7.50. A ver, Gloria, ¿cuánto gana un papá en Guatemala, pobre?
Un papá pobre.
How much does a poor dad earn in Guatemala? That was the question. Yeah, about $5. That would be a poor guy working in Guatemala would make about $5 a day. So if you got five people to feed, how much is that per day? You can do the math from there. $1 a day. Are you going to be able to have, are your kids going to be malnourished? Yeah. Yeah, like an average work day, make $5. Now that's higher than some areas we work in. Cambodia, a lot of the guys will make $3 a day. Or places like the South Pacific, Africa, you're talking per capita incomes of $1,000 per person. So Guatemala's a little better off. Their per capita income is about $2,500, so they aren't quite as poor as some of the worst places, but it's still pretty poor. All right, so your kid, you're only... Oh, I should let you talk, Gloria. Que dan a un niño pobre en Guatemala para comer? So what do they give a poor kid in Guatemala to eat? Que dan a un niño pobre para comer si el papá gana $5 al día? ¿Qué le dan de comer?
Solo tomate.
Tomato. Corn tortillas, salt.
All right, can a kid get enough calories and micronutrients per day eating corn and salt? Can an adult get enough? We'll try a double question here. An adult can do okay. Why can an adult do okay, but a kid can't do okay?
The
child's stomach's small, so they have a volume limit in intake. So the child cannot simply eat enough corn until they get enough calories. They will starve just eating corn. They cannot get enough out of it. If you're 25, yeah, you can just sit and eat corn tortillas. It's got a complete protein source. It's got a complete caloric source. You might even end up fat. But a one-year-old won't do okay. A two-year-old won't. Who would like to read this for me? I'll pick.
Sure. The prevention of low birth weight and the promotion of adequate growth and development during early childhood will result in healthier, more productive adults. Such investments, because they build human capital, are best viewed as long-term economic strategies.
Okay, the Copenhagen Consensus. You invest a dollar in a malnourished kid, how much benefit do you get out of $1 spent, and how much future earnings, additional earnings will that child have? They say $58 of good for $1 invested and $18 in additional future earnings for every $1 invested. So this is something we harp on a lot. We're always asked, how do you promote self-reliance? Well, we stop 10% of them from dying, and then we give them $20 in future earnings for each $1 we invest now. All right, let's say we take a kid and they pay tight in the future. If they're going to get $18 in future earnings out for every $1 we invest now, are we going to break even? Okay, sorry about that. Here's the development goals. So here's some of the kids. We've largely used university students to do our screenings, unless it's really crazy people like Bob. So, because they move quick. I mean, if you're going to one stake, you're going to four chapels sometimes in one day, then you go to bed, and you wake up the next day, you go to a new stake, you do four more chapels in one day. It is tiring.
Great
so
fun.
And you know, you're taking care, you're seeing hundreds of kids each time you go. So we usually have had groups of kids go. Here's what they do when they screen. You sit them down, you get their demographic information. Right now, Wendy Chapman's right here. She's with University of Utah, BMI. She's helping us work on a database for the kids so we can computerize it. But historically, we've just had to fill out sheets. So there's no internet in these places. There's no reliable computers at all. A lot of the areas still don't have cell phones, things like that. So it's a little tough to get the data out, but right now we're working hard on it. So we collect the data, we take their heights, their weights, we enter them into a computerized growth chart, and we say you're malnourished or not malnourished. How do you decide if someone's malnourished? What's the cutoff that's used by the World Health Organization? We take 100 kids, how many would be below the second percentile? 2. So that's the cutoff. Most kids in the U.S., being a doctor, you know, I've done a lot of shots, vaccinations. I don't really see kids below the second percentile almost ever, unless they're syndromic. By syndromic, I mean they were born with some kind of health problem that's going to make them small. Occasionally, I might rarely see a kid under the second percentile, but I'll tell you, it doesn't matter if they're black, Hispanic, white, Asian, whatever, they just are never below the second percentile. If I see a kid below the second percentile, I'm going to be worried something's going on with mom that's wrong. So I probably will get WIC involved, Child Protective Services, but I almost never see it. So this was the initial screening back in 2009, I think in 7 stakes. So you can see the malnutrition rates in Guatemala are pretty significant. They were pretty significant in Ecuador as well. If you look at this chart, which kids are about to die? Anybody want to guess which ones are about to die? The very top two, the wasted kids, those are the ones that die. The rest of them are just going to have real low IQs unless someone gets to them. So generally we're seeing, I got to look at this for Guatemala. So you see that some of the kids are in real trouble. I mean, some of them do die. We have lots of kids on the project. We lose kids every year. We do our best to get to them, but you can't always change their destiny. So of these kids, most of the kids in our program are LDS. We're about 75% LDS, about 25% non-LDS. So we invite the LDS kids via the stake presidents and bishops to come to the screenings. Almost everywhere. There are some exceptions, but hardly any. So the stake president invites them. We say, you can bring a friend along. So then they call some friends in. A lot of the places the missionaries come in, they help the screen and set it up. So we do have some non-members on the program. It's 3/4 members. In Guatemala more, probably 90% of the kids in Guatemala are members, or in Central America generically.
These are primary children.
No, pre-primary, most of them.
Pre-primary children.
Yeah,
nursery age children and younger.
Yeah, probably 2/3 of them are nursery age children and younger. We only help kids till 60 months. After that, we turn them over to corn tortillas. By that age, their stomach's starting to get bigger and they can start doing better. Gloria, ¿qué porcentaje de los miembros en Guatemala son, o en Centroamérica son miembros y no miembros?
De los que tenemos.
Sí. No, she says 50-50. What do I know? I'm wrong. Our goal is 50-50, but I thought we weren't meeting that in Central America. So.
So when you say 200,000 kids, what do you mean? That's how many you're working in the program with?
No, we're working right now with 12,000 and 200 stakes.
I don't know why.
There's about 125,000 around the entire globe, so we've hit about 10% of our target population.
Okay.
So we still have quite a ways to go. So what do the kids in the program get? They get a nutritional supplement. If you want the technical details, it's 240 kilocalories per day. And unless you're about to die, then you get even more calories. They get dewormed every 6 months. Here's a story I like to tell, just for fun. We deworm the kids. Something always happens when we deworm them. What would that be? Anybody want to guess? They argue about who had the biggest worm come out of them.
What kind of worms are these?
Probably mostly tapeworms.
Tapeworms.
Try to give them a micronutrient supplement every other day. And BYU has developed some educational modules. We're working with a few departments at BYU right now. So the students go down and work on education modules. We're trying to give a module every month. When they pick up the supplement, we're trying to do an education module. And it has to be made different a little bit for each place because each country has its own characteristics. So BYU's public health and sociology departments, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 professors from those two departments working with us on the education package. In fact, right now I think we have about 10 students out in the field, all BYU kids. We've tried to get UVU involved. I've tried to get the University of Utah involved. Struck out. But I'll keep trying. I mean, I've had BYU Hawaii, BYU Idaho, BYU Provo, LDS Business College. There's no reason the other universities can't participate, but I'm probably approaching it wrong. I don't know what to do for sure. Elementary school. I say there's about 125,000 malnourished kids. What happens when they turn 5? They're supposed to go to school. Do they all get to go to school? No, they don't all get to go to school. It depends on the place. If I'm in Cambodia, I'm going to say at least half the LDS kids can't go to school. If I'm in the Philippines, it's probably 10%. If I'm in Central America, it's probably 20%. If I'm in South America, it's probably only 1 to 2%. So I'm in the South Pacific. We just barely opened the South Pacific. It's pretty high. I'm not sure what it is yet. We just don't have enough data back from the South Pacific. Africa also has a lot of kids that don't go to school. I'll talk about volunteer opportunity a little bit later, but that's been a success story. We started in elementary. The first place we opened up our elementary ed program was in Central America. So it hadn't been going for more than about a year and a half, and the area presidents just said, hey, what are you guys doing on an elementary education program? We said, trying to get the kids in school. Said, oh, we'll take that over for you here. So they just took it over and said, we'll pay for it. Just send us the name of the kid and their stake and their award. So we think we could duplicate that success if we had enough warm bodies to try to get it open up in other places. We have a little Christmas party every year. So right now we aren't doing a lot with elementary education. I'm the one who sends out the money. I'm going to say we have a few hundred kids. We've got 12,000 on malnutrition, only a few hundred on elementary education. We just don't have a lot of money, so we debate, okay, do we help the kid that's starving, or do we send the kid to school? So at this point, we made the decision we'll help the kid that's starving. So we aren't doing much, but we figured that we could somehow maybe do some elementary ed work. In every stake, we have what we call a coordinator. So Gloria is someone who ran the program in 3 stakes, and then she manages the other 57 stakes in Central America. I finally talked her into giving up 2 of the 3 stakes she was running. So right now she's only running 1 plus the other 60. So they have to screen the kids' height and weight every 6 months. So you can imagine that's quite an undertaking. Like Gloria's over, 3,500 kids in 60 locations? That's a lot of work to try to arrange that. I mean, it's something else to try to keep it going and get that to happen. And, you know, she's also alone because BYU can't go to Central America. So I know it sounds weird, but they aren't allowed to go to Central America. It's too dangerous. So she doesn't get the help the other places get. A lot of times they have BYU kids bouncing down. It'll help screen. She's stuck all by herself with her coordinators. All right, you want to sponsor a kid? How much does it cost? You know, it depends on the place, but the average is usually about $6 a month for malnutrition. The stake depends on how many kids, of course, are there, but it's about $6,000 a year on average. Elementary ed's about the same. All right, who's going to read this one for me? I'll keep going up this way right there.
Good evening, brother. Oh, from the stake president in San Felipe, Guatemala. Good evening, brother. I've worked for many years to pay my bills, and I know what it means to earn a dollar. For that reason, I thank all of you for your tremendous kindness towards my Guatemalan brothers. I'd say sisters, too. I know the Lord is blessing you because that would be just, and your love won't go unnoticed by your Lamanite brothers and sisters. You will be in our prayers so that our Heavenly Father will greatly bless each of you and your families. Thanks for your help. Cesar Gomez, State President.
All right, thanks.
Brother Walker.
Hermano Walker, that's what they call me still, instead of Elder Walker.
It's a pleasure to say hi and let you know that the Incaprina, is that what you said? Supplement has been distributed to 300 children, even after removing children over age 6 from the program. These are our neediest children. I'll send receipts shortly. Don't worry about the money you're sending, as it's doing much good and being utilized appropriately. I need some more time to take the kids' weights, to the great distances, and I haven't been able to do it yet. It's a blessing for me to work with the children of our state in
Momotenango.
Yeah, that one. Much thanks to all of you for what you're doing for the children.
Yeah, we really have a lot of enthusiastic state presidents, and work a lot with the primary presidency too. A lot of times they kind of assign the primary presidency to try to help us out. Is this correct? Yeah, it's missing Donna. That's about right. This is where I'm at.
5 more minutes.
5 more minutes. Sit down and shut up.
Okay.
Now, here's a letter we got from a missionary couple in South Sudan. They said, our branch has a lot of malnourished kids. They don't have shoes either. That was before the Civil War broke out. We screamed, but we never got to send anything because the church pulled out. I said, the branch in the primary, that's a branch? Gee whiz. Okay, needs. We could use a lot of help in a lot of areas. There aren't that many of us. I mean, there just aren't enough of us. There's about 30 total people working on this in the U.S. besides donors. So we got about 1,000 donors. The average donor donates $1,000. That gives us our current budget $1 million. So, you know, there's a lot of needs. You can look through this list, but here's our biggest needs. We just had a board meeting. First, we need someone that wants to manage an elementary education program for malnourished LDS kids. Kind of desperate for a CPA volunteer. In order to apply for funds from big foundations. We've gotten a couple of foundation grants this year for the first time, a couple hundred thousand. They want us to be auditable. Well, today we're in 17 countries in the middle of nowhere. How are we going to become auditable? We don't even know how to become auditable. So we're looking for a volunteer CPA, if anybody knows anybody. We're trying to become legal in all the countries we work. That means make a local foundation, because that's what the church wants us to do, so they can work with us. That's not an easy task. I mean, what do we know about becoming legal in, for example, Ecuador or Zimbabwe? Well, we don't know very much, but we're trying to figure it out. So we could really use somebody that had a legal background in international law or something.
Would you say that's the only barrier from the church formally working with you?
No, there's a number of church areas that are working with us, but they would like us to be legal. But it's not the only barrier. I mean, it depends on the area presidency, the area welfare manager, the director of temple affairs, the welfare committee folks, you know, trying to make a decision. And they rotate in and out every few years, so it's a real adventure. There's nothing. A true adventure.
I don't think we understand why the church isn't doing this for its own people already. Why are we spending millions on humanitarian service and our own children are wasting and malnourished? Why?
Yeah. We try not to answer. We don't want to get involved in that question, because, you know, we got to work with the church. We got to be supportive of the church. Obviously, we got to fundraise for members. So we just stay away from that question. There's a lot of people asking it on blogs all over the place. You can go online. I get to just type in our foundation's name and read all the comments. And oh my goodness, some of it can be critical, to sarcastic, to caustic. You know, some of it. So. But we ourselves as a foundation have just stayed away from that question. It's not that we don't have an idea what the answer is, it's just that if you want to talk, to come to me as an individual and not as a member of a foundation, I'm glad to talk to you any time, but there's plenty of reasons.
So a related question then, but I think that you might be able to answer. You know, Dallin H. Oak said recently that the church donates $40 million a year to charity or to humanitarian causes. Does Leah Hunter Foundation get any of that?
No, that money is for organizations that work with non-members. None of that money is for members. All the money for members comes through welfare funding, which is around $800 million a year or so, much more than $40
million. Yeah.
Well, do they not have a welfare program in these countries, a church welfare program?
Yeah, the current welfare program and a stake consists of local donations. So if I go down to Guatemala and go to rural stake, you know, local donations are usually, you know, $100 to $200 a year. You have to have some training.
There's nothing that comes from the church per se to fund welfare programs.
It depends on the area and the level of concern about, like, theft, fraud, stuff like that. The poorer the stake, the less likely it is to get money generally because of those issues. So.
But you mentioned $800 million, and where generally does that go?
They're heading me down a bad path.
I'm sorry.
It's in your dialogue article.
It's in my dialogue article. About 99% of welfare dollars are spent in wealthy countries. So if you take $800 million and you throw 1% of that, you're dealing with about 8 million cent. Between 2,000 stakes, maybe, that are in poor countries, maybe not that many, maybe 1,500 stakes. You'd have to do the math. I don't know how much that is. A few thousand, maybe on average, comes from outside the stakes. Sorry, Bob. Before we go here, we had someone coming that was going to talk about NutriTours and stake screenings, but they didn't show up.
We have some time.
But I want Alan to say something, and I want you to say something about your screening experience. I'm all done. Thank you for having me. Let's read the last quote. There's no reason, just because we're at Sunstone, we can't read this quote. Who wants to volunteer to read? Alan, read it for me.
Better get far enough back, I can see it. I believe that when we face our Maker, we will not be asked how many positions did you help, but rather how many people did you help. When we have eyes that see and ears that hear and hearts that know and feel, we will recognize current trends and current needs of our fellow beings among us who cry out for help. How do they eat without food? How do they keep warm without clothing, without shelter? How do they live without means? How do they get well without doctors, medicines, and hospitals?
Good questions. Alan, I would like you to talk a little bit. First of all, explain to us, some of you may know what one standard deviation means, but I didn't until Alan explained it to me. So, and then it seemed to me really dramatic when we talk about these kids dropping one standard deviation in terms of their level of health. So you've got a microphone right there, or you can.
Yeah, I'm just going to walk down here because we're close enough. I think you might be able to hear me.
It's
being recorded. All right.
Yeah.
Even as a professor, I don't stand at the desk. I walk around the room. All right. So a standard deviation. If you remember back when you were in school, elementary school. And they had 100 kids. Well, you had your kids lined up height by height, right? Tallest to shortest to take photos on photo day. So if you lined up 100 children and you did it by their God-given intelligence instead of height, so most intelligent, most gifted to least gifted in the group, and you have 100 kids lined up, a standard deviation of intelligence lost would mean that any child who didn't get enough to eat would lose 33 places in that line. They would move down 33 spots from toward the least gifted end of that line. So you can imagine, the bottom of that line is mostly malnourished kids. And it's not related to their God-given talent. It's related to the fact that they didn't get enough to eat in those first 1,000 days. So we have a statistician in the audience, which is good. And that's great. So the worst case scenario is it could be you move halfway down that list. And if you started in the bottom half, you're definitely in the bottom, no matter how you look at it. When we go till what, 3:30?
Go to 3:30.
Okay, is that right? There's nothing worse than sitting in the audience thinking you think the meeting's over and he's still going. But I want to just spend a couple minutes because I want to say just a few things. They asked me to say at the last minute, so I'm going to embarrass them a little bit. I'm Alan Jones. I'm the executive director. My background is an Ivy League MBA, and I ran a bunch of companies. And they got to the point where they began to grow as an organization and began to realize we kind of need somebody who knows how to run a business to help us to make sure that we're making that transition from startup to a more professional organization. I want you to know, none of us get paid anything. There isn't anybody on the staff that, on the leadership team that feels like it's okay to take food out of a kid's mouth. So we all do this as charity. But I want you to understand a little bit about who we are. I get annoyed because I can't ever get Brad on the phone because he's always working. He works in ER, and so he's always working. He takes extra shifts. So I talk to his sister and say, why does Brad always work? He says, well, he works the extra shifts because he wants to donate more to feed these kids. You've got Bob, whose kids call me and say, can you get him to stop traveling so much around the world? Doesn't he realize that he's no longer a kid? And he goes anyway. Gloria spent more than 10 years in bed, sick. And now that she's healthy, she spends her days running around helping other people. And I know, because she helped my daughter-in-law, who is from her area, who is from that San Felipe stake we saw one of the state presidents talking about. My son got married to her in January, and Gloria helped put together a lot of the process of getting her to the United States. So she lives in our home now. It's great fun to live with a Guatemalan all the time. These people work hard because they feel in their heart that it's not right that these kids are hungry. And we're not going to try to defend why it is that we haven't come up with a program as an organization, a church organization, yet. It doesn't exist yet. It will. I have no doubt we'll figure it out as a church. But we haven't figured it out yet. So we're not willing to wait until it's figured out. You know, why isn't it welfare? Well, welfare is a short-term program. 1 to 3 months, fast offerings, right? You get help for a few months,
and then you get back on your feet and you take care of yourself. But a child needs help for 1,000 days, not for 90 days. And so it doesn't really fit our programs. And bishops aren't trained to deal with malnutrition. They don't know what a malnourished child looks like. They might have been a malnourished child themselves. Isn't that normal for our country? You know, where they live? So we don't want to point fingers. It doesn't do us any good to point fingers. So in the interim, the church has a wonderful program for getting people, you know, once they get to school, we've got young men's, young women's, to try to teach them how to become a missionary. We get them on a mission, teach them how to lead. We get them back. There's a perpetual education fund to help them get trained to get a job. But the missing hole for us is, why not give them a full intellect so they have a fighting chance to be successful in school and on a mission and as a working parent, so they can then provide for their family when they're adults and have the chance to break a cycle. The poverty cycle in Guatemala is tough to break if you have your full faculties. If you're a standard deviation, 33 or 43 spots down, the odds of getting out of that cycle get very, very small. So that's why we do this. We do this because this is the work of the Savior. To feed the hungry. It's not being done, so we're trying to do it. How big is the problem? If we could get $7 million a year, we could probably solve the entire problem for the church membership, for these children. This is not a problem that's so big we can't solve it. 130 million children malnourished, that seems like a big problem. 100,000? Gosh, we can do that. And we're one-tenth of the way there. And so that's why we're doing this. And that's what it's about. Let me just finish up by saying, you know, my son went to Guatemala, and my other son wanted to figure out what life was in Guatemala, so he watched a movie about these college kids that went down there to live on a dollar a day, and it's pretty crazy. It's called Living on a Dollar a Day. You can find it. And so the next day, that son pulled out a bottle and put a label on it and said, for Guatemalan kids, so we could throw our money in it. And he didn't really know what to do with it, but we started. You know, and then we went down to pick up our son in Guatemala and got to meet all these people. In fact, we went to the temple, and my wife sat next to a woman in the temple. And 3 months later, she came to our house. I wasn't working with Leah Home at that point. Gloria sat next to my wife in the temple in Quetzaltenango and made friends with her, because that's the kind of woman she is. And then 3 months later, she showed up at our house to stay at our house because Brad brought her up for a conference and she needed a place to stay. And she walks into my wife and goes, wait a minute, I know you. But we went down and we lived there and we saw these kids. The kids are happy. They don't sit around depressed. But they don't run around the street. They don't run around playing soccer. They don't ride bikes. They don't do the stuff your kids do in your neighborhood. They don't have the energy. They're not running around sad. They just don't have the energy. So we're not taking a child who is depressed and trying to make them happy. But we are trying to take a child who doesn't know what they don't have and help them be complete. And so I took those bottles around our neighborhood, and our neighborhood sponsors that San Felipe steak, and I had not ever seen that letter. That was moving. So get involved. There are plenty of ways to do it. Just put a dollar a day aside in your own little jar, and you will change a half dozen lives. It's pretty simple. So did you want to go do some of the things, and then I can do a Q&A later if you want, or however you want to manage it?
I was going to show you another short video before we do some kind of concluding remarks, if I can find out where it is. So, one of the things that I'm very interested in is helping people to understand that what we're talking about in many ways is the future of the church. If you have 50% malnutrition in the Philippines and in Guatemala, it means that 50% of those kids are growing up to be leaders, to be fathers and mothers, to be missionaries, and if their mental capacity and their physical capacity is so dramatically compromised, think about the impact of that on the future of the church. And I talked about this when one of our coordinators from the Philippines was here. She's a doctor. Her husband was head of seminaries and institutes in the Philippines, and they were called to be mission presidents, and our mission presidents right now. And I was talking about this, and he said, "It just dawned on me, Bob, that when I have been working with the seminaries and institutes, and I go around and talk to state presidents and bishops, and I find that they're not very smart, I realize that's because they were their intellect and their physical health was compromised when they were children." And if you think about that in terms of its capacity, in terms of developing the future of the church, it's really significant. But if you also think about it, if it would take $300 to cover those 1,000 days, if you invest that $300, that child is more likely to go to and complete elementary education, more likely to get secondary education, more likely to go on a mission and be a good missionary, more likely to be a bishop or a relief society president, more likely to be employed, and employed to an extent that they make enough money to help bring their own family out of poverty, but also, as Brad stated, pay tithing many times beyond the $300 it would take to invest in with them. So it just makes sense to do this. The other thing I was going to say is that, you know, people say, "Well, what can I do?" And Alan was saying, if you take a jar, and my stake in Los Angeles, my stake has adopted a stake in Guatemala. So it means that the member from my stake, I live in Marin County, so a lot of people in that stake could do this on their own. But we have these jars, Leona jars, and we pass them out, and people fill them up with their coins and their dollars and bring them in, and it's very easy to do that. So as Alan was saying, if you put a dollar a day in, it means that you could actually feed six, you could take care of the nutritional needs of six children across someplace in the developing world. Okay, I'm going to see if I can find this thing, which is the Hewlett thing. Which one is Hewlett's? Maybe this one. No, it's not the one. I can't seem to find it. But
it's the other one down there.
Pardon? Which one is it?
Go back to your list.
Oh, you'll come up. Okay, well, Darren's finding it for us. I teach ethics sometimes, among many other things, but in a course I was teaching at UC Santa Cruz a couple of years ago, I took a professor at Princeton by the name of Singer, who presents moral problems. And the moral problem, I presented this to my very bright freshman honors class at Hewlett's? Okay, yeah. Thank you. So we'll play this and then I'll tell my story.
I love telling my kids stories and scaring them. That's always fun. I mean, it's fun to chase them around, make them laugh. And at the same time, I think that it's fascinating that I go all over the world and I perform for people and I make them laugh, and sometimes, yeah, I scare them. And that is awesome. But in reality, there is a truly scary story out there happening. It's happening in third world countries to families that are suffering every single day. They're having problems with malnutrition, starvation, and even death. And that's what I want to talk to you today about, the Liahona Children's Foundation, and how you can help. I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I give my money, I give my time, I give my talents. But when I'm approached for something that is so far away from me, I'm embarrassed to say I have refused helping them. And I'm devastated by that now that I think of it. Maybe it's because I have children now. Maybe it's because I see them eating and playing and having a good time. And as I've traveled the world, I've seen the reality. And I believe that I have not helped the people that I could have. And it really hurts my heart. And that's why I'm a part of this great foundation. The actual developmental process of a child for the first 1,000 days of their life, their brain to be able to actually develop and grow so that they're not stuck for the rest of their life in a cycle that will never improve. But with the nutrition and the supplements that Liahona Children's Foundation provides, these children have a chance. I'm Jason Hewlett. I invite you to join me with the Liahona Children's Foundation. Let's make a difference for these children. Please visit our website or join us on your favorite social media platform. Let's come together and help these children that need us now. I hope you'll join me.
So my story is that I take Professor Singer's little moral problem. He says you own a classic Bugatti, which is worth let's say $300,000. I present this to my students, and you're driving it to get it insured, and it stalls on the railroad track. And so you get out and start. You're going to start walking to get to the insurance company. Just don't worry about cell phones. Don't ruin the story. And you see a train coming, and the train is going to hit your $300,000 Bugatti. But you see there's a switch you can turn that will stop it from hitting your Bugatti. But if you turn that switch, there are children playing on the other track. So the question is, what would you do? What would you do? Pardon?
Would it crash the bike?
Yeah, make sure it did. So then what Professor Singer says is, according to the UN, you could save the life of a child in the world next year for just $200. And so then I say to my students, that's a new pair of tennis shoes, that's a ski trip, that's saving, you know, not going to the movies for a month or two. So it's pretty easy for you to, you know, to come up with $200. How many of you would be willing to do that? And it's really interesting to see how they squirm and how they try to argue, well, yes, but, and you could do this. So Hillel said, you cannot solve all of the problems in the world, but neither are you excused from trying. So what can you do? Something. $70 saves the life of a child. You could get your ward or your stake or your friends or your family. We have a number of families who have adopted a stake someplace in the world. My wife and I recently adopted a stake. For $5,000 a year, you can take care of all of the malnourished children in one of these stakes. So, what does it mean? Sacrificing a vacation this year? What does it mean going, cutting that short? It means getting one of Alan's jars and putting your coins in it. Everybody can do something. And so our invitation is to get involved in this exciting work. Wendy's class, Wendy, you want to quickly say what your class is doing at the university?
Sure. So we're the biomedical informatics department here at the School of Medicine. And it's a very small class, but there's three faculty and about three students, one who's in Russia right now, actually. And we're there. Somebody built an application, and we're working on it to make it more usable and testing it, and then we'll help generate reports and do analysis on that.
Great. Thank you. Another thing you can do is we have a program called NutriTours, where you can go participate in the screenings and climb the pyramids or go down a river or see, you know, buy wonderful Guatemalan fabrics or do something else. You can combine a NutriTour of helping with the screening, but also doing other things. Is this one of the students who participated in the program?
No, she runs our African program.
Oh, this is Rose. My gosh, I didn't notice you. Rose, Rose runs our program in Ghana. Ghana. Rose, please come and tell us about your work, would you?
Sure.
Take about 5 minutes and let us know what you do.
Rose has an MPH from BYU. Her husband's in a PhD program.
I have a bachelor's, sorry.
Oh, a bachelor's, sorry.
My husband has. Yeah.
Public health.
My name is Rose Ansanji, and my husband and I supervise the program in Ghana. We actually set that up in Ghana over a little over a year ago. And it's something that we really enjoy doing. We contact them on a weekly basis and see how things are going. And it's amazing to see how those children, when they first come on board into the program, how frail they are, how sick some of them look. And just after a few months, 3 to 6 months, the changes that we see in them, it's tremendous. Is very, very encouraging, and that is what keeps us going. And for us, it's a very special thing that we can be part of Liahona Children's Foundation and do our very best in helping these families in Ghana and other part of the world to get the help that they need. I remember last year, we were going around doing fundraising events, and people often ask, so why are leaders of these nations not helping their own children take care of them, and why do we have to be here in the U.S. going around and, you know, soliciting in a way for funds to help these children? And, you know, in a perfect world, that's what it's supposed to be. We need to have these countries be responsible for their own children. And I am originally from Ghana, and growing up, food wasn't a problem in my home, but most kids have that problem, that getting food on the table morning, afternoon, night, it's very difficult. And even once one meal a day, it's even a problem for most families. And so, yes, it will be good for these country leaders to take care of their own, but unfortunately, they are not doing that job. And as mankind, we can't just neglect that and say, they are not doing it, and so we will not do anything and sit back. And that's one thing my husband and I so much cherish about Liahona's mission and how they reach out not just to, you know, people in the environment, but they reach across the world and help these children. And for us, it's very important. So we hope that, you know, these stories and, you know, the mission of the organization will touch you in a very special way, where you can talk to your family members and friends and ward members and in your community and spread the word for us, that we can get more people on board and that people will know what actually is going on and how we are helping these children. And it's exciting to see when they progress and how well they look. And, you know, the joy in their parents' faces alone, you know, just gladden your hearts. And it's very important thing that my husband and I could be part of this and to work so hard in helping these children in Ghana. And it's a joy every day. I'm a mom of 3 children. Age is 8, 5, and 3. And I cannot imagine seeing one of them go to bed hungry every night or being sick so severely that just a little supplement could help them survive, and they can't get that. It's heartbreaking when you hear some of those stories. And so for me, it's a pure joy that I could be part of this, and I hope you can be touched in a way to see the work we are doing across the world and how you can be part of that too, or family members and friends can be part of that. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Rosie. Thank you all for coming. We'll be around if any of you want to ask questions.